I have these 3 a.m. thoughts, you know, and 3 a.m. like things that I have to get out. And it's so creative and it's so like, oh, this is going to change the whole, you know, next level of our company. But sometimes I don't even know where it fits in the organization, you know, at times. And so that creative innovation bug of consistently looking at market trends and industry trends and trying to keep up and trying to be the next this and that is something that I find difficult and I struggle with at times, you know.
Hey everyone, my name is Angela Hollowell and I'm your host here at Honey and Hustle. In this episode, I'm sitting down with Desmond Wiggin, who is the founder of The Battery Exchange based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. This guy has some incredible stories and experiences to share, and I'm super excited for you to hear his story. In this episode, you will learn how to leverage your life and work experiences to grow your business. So Desmond, you are a North Carolina guy through and through. You started your collegiate journey, the journey that I know about, at Winston-Salem State University. Talk to me about, like, how young were you when you knew you wanted to go into entrepreneurship?
You know what? I think I knew early on because it was something that is, like, embedded in my family. I say I'm, like, a third-generation entrepreneur. So my dad has been an entrepreneur for over 30 years, 35 years now in finance. And then my grandfather, you know, we're also descendants of Jamaica. So my grandfather, while in Jamaica, became an entrepreneur, not by choice, but by circumstance, like, you know, had to leave his job and like had to figure out something, right? So became a catalyst in his community, providing like products. So I think when you hear those stories of like my grandparents, and then also just seeing my dad as I grew up, I ran track and field. And one of the things that, you know, I always loved seeing is that he could travel with me, because he was doing the whole remote work before remote work was cool, you know? So things like that, and just being, you know, understanding of or comfortable with taking risk was something that my dad always talked to me about. And he would always give me like entrepreneurial books as I was growing up. So I knew earlier on that this was something I would, you know, dive into. For me, it was just like finding the thing, you know?
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit in your journey to talking about some of the travel that you did while you were getting your MBA in a very entrepreneurial focused kind of degree program. Talk to me a little bit about how that travel kind of influenced kind of your trajectory following that degree.
Yeah, perfect segue. And I think to even help segue that, I want to talk about how like influential my family was for me taking that leap. So I didn't know anybody. I didn't speak the language at the time. And it was my grandmother. She recently passed. But she just always was a ambitious woman. And one of the conversations that we had was, you never know what blessing is on the other side of that sacrifice or that risk and what's out there. And so she was just like, yeah, I know you don't know anybody, but go, you know, even when my parents were a little nervous, my now wife, she was a little nervous. Everybody thought I was crazy. But that literally changed the entire trajectory of my career. You know, getting into an MBA program allowed me to be over there for free, actually. So I didn't have to pay for the MBA program. They put me up to, you know, on a campus in a city called Zhengzhou. So like middle of nowhere of China. But I think what that allowed me to do is, you know, and one of the reasons that led me to China was I saw from afar how just intentional they were within economics, you know, technology and all these different things. And I was just like, man, it would be phenomenal for me to like immerse myself into the culture. And so that's what that opportunity allowed me to do. And I ended up, you know, building relationships out there. They call it Guanxi, you know, relationships and network. And I was able to build enough Guanxi that introduced me to an individual that ran a company that allowed, you know, companies from across the globe to find like manufacturing partners and technology partners in China. And so with my understanding, like American business and want to immerse the Chinese culture, he gave me an opportunity to, you know, be a part of conversations with robotics companies, you know, blockchain companies, sharing a economy companies. And so that was like my exposure to technology in Shanghai, Beijing, and just kind of seeing thriving ecosystems and see how things are supposed to work, you know? And so for me, it was exciting. It was like one of the best experience that I've ever had. And then also, I guess the last piece of me going out there too was, you know, I'm big on exposing my community to what the world is like. Like nobody I knew even had traveled that far. And then, you know, we had all these narratives preconceived of what we thought China was like. And so before TikTok, I would share on like my Facebook, you know, like, hey, this is what I was doing. These are the people I was meeting. And these were my experiences so that they can see and hopefully encourage them to like want to see this new land, you know?
Mm-hmm. So bring it back to North Carolina. I'm not going to guess your age, but just judging on the dates, we're probably around a similar age. So you're probably like young 20s around this time when that program ended, and you come back and you're like working at Pepsi, which is like the North Carolina company next to like Texas Pete and like, I don't know, football. I don't know, like whatever the other industries are here. And so what was that experience like, kind of switching gears from almost like a tech focused kind of like immersion to then going back to what's as old as time, which is like manufacturing?
Yeah. And the timeline is a little different where I actually started Pepsi straight out of undergrad. And I did my corporate years, which I believe, like, I'm not one of those entrepreneurs that like down corporate. Like it was probably one of the most integral learning experiences for me to now be an effective CEO. You know, I got into a leadership development program. You know, 2 weeks out of graduation, I was, you know, in a warehouse, and then I was in a production facility, and I was in these, you know, quote unquote, you know, blue collar tears because I needed to learn how the product was made, right? And the more that you learn around the supply chain structure and manufacturing, the more effective that you can be as a salesman. That was ultimately where I was going to be. And so those years, they threw me at so many different projects and so many different opportunities. And I think even that allowed me to be even more effective in Asia. And then so coming back, it was more of so like, do I want to go back to corporate or do I want to like do my own thing? And so those are just some of the decisions that I had to make. But Pepsi was really good to me. You know, again, you know, out of New Bern, like it is the bread and butter of, you know, business culture in North Carolina. And, you know, that really opened up a lot of doors for me, just like mentorship, you know, the ability to utilize that brand to get into different programming, you know. And so I was very intentional on just utilizing that to help my career as much as possible.
What is interesting so far about your story is that you have these incredible experience from like, you know, childhood onto early adulthood, where you have almost this like cradling of support, like people who are there to support you, you know, personally, professionally, academically, you know, things that, you know, the level of training I never had, a level of training most people just aren't exposed to when it comes to starting a business or bootstrapping a business or anything like that. And I'm really interested to hear like your perspective on just like being a sponge and then having to go to a place where you have to be a little more discerning about, you know, the information that you're receiving and the input and feedback that you're receiving on a daily basis about your now company.
Yeah. I think, you know, some of the things that I grew up just embracing and, you know, life lessons and philosophies and core values that I've always implemented is just being as genuine as possible. I feel like that's something that people just naturally pick up and they gravitate towards, like, man, this guy isn't trying to get over on me. Like he's just coming as vulnerable as possible. And then another, you know, just core value for me is giving more to others than I expect to receive and I'll never be without. Right. So I've always done mentorship, you know, to high school students, even when I was in college, you know, even in my early career time, you know, talking to Black and brown students. And then now even as a tech entrepreneur doing that same thing. And so I believe the more and more you give to the world and give to people to hopefully motivate them to get to the next level, the more the world is going to give of you, you know, and that's just something that like just is within my bloodline. That's like a Jamaican kind of way that we kind of move. And I feel like that's some of the reasons why opportunities present themselves is because, you know, I give and then, you know, I try to be as genuine, as pure as possible. And, you know, I try to also find areas where I could add value to individuals, you know, and it's not always just receiving, like, how can I give to you, even if you're older, you know? And so I think when they see that intentionality, you know, doors just continue to open up. And I think, you know, a core component too, I'm a pretty spiritual, you know, individual. And I feel like that definitely opens up, you know, just some opportunities for me as well.
With all of this, like, you know, intrinsic and learned knowledge that you have, has there ever been a time where you were like, yeah, I have the answers to this. I know exactly what I want to do. I know exactly what I need to do. And then you had a moment where like life and business humbled you.
Oh, all the time. It's like every other week I'm humbled, you know, and that's just the part of entrepreneurship. It's like, you know, I get excited about things, you know, even in my current state, I have these things. And one of the reasons I emailed you this morning, you know, it was super early. I have these 3 a.m. thoughts, you know, and 3 a.m. like things that I have to get out. And it's so creative. And it's so like, oh, this is going to change the whole, you know, next level of our company. But sometimes I don't even know where it fits in the organization, you know, at times. And so that creative innovation bug of consistently looking at market trends and industry trends and trying to keep up and trying to be the next this and that is something that I find difficult and I struggle with at times, you know. Like sometimes it works out and I just figure it out, but oftentimes I just don't know. And so in those moments, you know, one of the things that, you know, I always encourage just like entrepreneurs, just professionals, period, is I have a safe space that I go to clear my mind when moments like that erupt, where I feel like I can't figure it out. And for me, it's not too far from where I live. It's by the lake. And you know, I do a lot of deep thinking there, and I spend just time whenever I can't think through a problem or I can't solve something, or I know it's on the tip of the spear of like me creating something, and I just go there. And I oftentimes figure it out after I kind of become one with like nature and, you know, water and all of these different things. So I know that's a little bit like intangible, but that's kind of where I go in order to figure things out. I'm probably due for it right now, to be honest.
I feel that. And it's gorgeous. It's like a gorgeous day outside today.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's nodding his head like he hasn't been outside. So we know what he's doing after this. But anyways, when I think about like all the different ways that your company could have solved the problem of people's phone batteries, like or tablets or laptops or whatever that device is dying in a public space and you've forgotten your charger, one thing I would not have thought about is like a portable station where I can rent a charger, right? So tell me how you came up with this as the solution for the problem of people's phones dying in public.
I think some of the best companies that are created are from people experiencing things and just solving the problem. And that's exactly how it happened for me. I was actually still in China. I, you know, was traveling and needed to get back to campus. And after a long day of traveling and taking pictures and photos and emails, you know, your phone runs dead. It runs dry. And so for me, I was in a moment in time where phone was dead. I didn't speak the language at the time, you know, and, you know, you think about the inconvenience, the anxiety, the fear, you know, I couldn't tell my wife like, hey, I'm headed home, or I couldn't even call Uber. They call it DD. They have DD out there. And so for me, it was just like, man, why isn't there a more convenient way, you know, when you're out and about to get access to mobile energy? And so that was kind of like the light bulb moment of being in that moment. And then, you know, doing research on how many people run into this and just like turn off their phone or limit their experiences or their encounters. And, you know, I saw that there was like an opportunity just within innovation, within charging. We like to say like we're in the the dial-up era of, you know, charging, you know, and, you know, we have an opportunity to create the same way you can rent a scooter or a Redbox or those other models to have access to what we call equitable energy, because it's actually free for end users, the way that our model works. But yeah, that it was just for me being in that moment, being inconvenienced, and always just trying to solve easy problems for everyday people.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I hope you're enjoying it. If you want to be the first to receive this episode in your inbox when it drops, please subscribe to our newsletter, Please Hustle Responsibly. I share that newsletter twice a week, and I would love to have you there in the comments section, in the chat, hanging out with us. And if you would like a premium version of that newsletter to get more access to the behind the scenes of my creative business, that option is available as well. And I would love to have you in our community of creators who are growing and scaling their businesses. All right, that's all for me. Let's get back to the episode.
Hey people, I think like what I think about, again, going back to your target audience, like technically it's everybody, right? But even more specifically, it's people who may be traveling. It's people who may be in a place where they don't speak the same language. It's people who may not be able to afford to have more than one charger that they take with them when they're going out and about. So I think there's a lot of ways that you kind of bridge that gap really well in terms of like meeting everybody's needs, but also meeting a specific type of person's needs at one time. So you are going through a raise right now, and you have also gotten a little bit of capital, a little bit of help from one of our previous guests, Kazem from Equilibrium Impact Ventures. Talk to me about, you know, the relationship that you have with Kazem and some of what you look for in a partner, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's kind of one of those, you know, stories with Equilibrium where long time coming, you know, I've known Kazem and Adrian and Dr. Shante for some years throughout the ecosystem of North Carolina, very influential individuals. And, you know, I would see them in spaces of influence and they would see me in spaces of, you know, grinding and, you know, like always pitching, you know, with it within pitch competitions or being a part of networking events. And I think that allowed me to kind of shine a little bit. And then it was just like building the relationship with them and, you know, learning, you know, how much of a focus they had in healthcare. You know, that's one of the big things. And you kind of mentioned it as far as like areas that make sense for us. For us, it's health systems. You know, we're in, you know, some of the largest health systems within the nation. And well, I say the region in particular, in, you know, emergency rooms where you got to drop everything and you got to go and you're going to be there on average 3.6 hours, you know, and you want to connect to your loved ones. You want to continue to do work. You want to utilize that time wisely and being able to access a device just through a mobile application for free just is one less thing to worry about in that moment, you know. And so with their background in healthcare, it was just like a perfect synergy because, you know, what we look for partners, especially as investors, are open doors. You know, how can we get into more health systems? How can we, you know, further understand the value that we have to these spaces, you know, create better go-to-market strategies? And I just felt like their expertise lended a really, really good exchange where, you know, yeah, the capital was good too. Definitely appreciative. But it just really helped us now on our track to, you know, $1.2 million, what we're raising. And we have now gotten some new commitments from some other national and local just investors and VCs that are in the ecosystem that, again, a lot of that came from the Equilibrium, you know, belief in who we are and what we're trying to build. So I'm super excited about that relationship.
Mm-hmm. So one thing we haven't really talked about on this show is people pitching their businesses. Yes, pitching to like specific venture capital groups and firms, but also pitching like at pitch competitions, which I see all the time. I've never done it, but that's something about that makes me nervous. But because I don't even know what I would say.
Like,
what
do us too. Trust me.
So talk to me about your preparation for a pitch, because I imagine like for better or for worse, that's gonna become more of a thing as we go forward, and like angel investing becomes more prominent. Not that it hasn't been for a long time, but like, you know, it might be less intimidating to work one-on-one with someone and have a more personal relationship before you move on to a firm that's probably can, yes, give more, but also is going to expect more. So talk to me about like your preparation for pitching, you know, your company.
Yeah, it all depends on the audience. You know, some are investors where, you know, there's an exchange of money and equity. You know, then there's like non-dilutive sources where, you know, maybe there's exchange of resources or access points. And so depending on what's important to the conversation and then the investor base, you know, I prep the, you know, what our go-to-market strategy is. I prep our business model. You know, those are the things we're storytelling about. How our company started, you know, and we're talking about how we monetize, you know, we're talking about the value that we create for users and businesses and, you know, how important data is for us and what AI looks like in, you know, the future growth of our company and, you know, how we think we can exit in a few years. So there's a lot that goes into prepping for a pitch. It is nerve-wracking, but I will say, you know, one of the things that I've been blessed with is being able to successfully pitch in North Carolina. You know, I've been a part of everything from my first pitch competition here in Charlotte was City Startup Labs, which is a African-American led, you know, program for, you know, people that look like me. And I won my first pitch competition. I was lucky, you know, and then moving on to other sources, but another more reputable in the RDU is NC Idea. You know, we were able to, you know, win the seed grant and the growth grant, which was phenomenal, you know, for us. And now we've been able to build relationships with those, you know, Tom and Amy and some of those individuals at NC Idea to, again, just open up doors. But for that, it's all about how are you producing jobs in North Carolina? How are you producing economic impact, right? So it's really understanding what's important, because like in a business, you have all these layers, but what's important to the entity that's listening to you, you got to have that at the forefront. That has to be the larger narrative, you know? And so I translate that same sentiment as I sell to health systems and hospitals and so forth and so on. So it's a lot of preparing. You get better as you go. It does get easier and you've learned a lot. I think, you know, one of the things that I try to do very intentionally is listening to the feedback that I get, you know, listening to the questions that come up, because it's like, I thought I maybe said that, but maybe I didn't say it clearly, or maybe I need to, you know, make that a bigger moment into, you know, my overarching pitch. So those are just some of the craziness that goes into the head, but I've pitched in front of 20 people and, you know, 10,000 people last year at InvestFest, you know, down in Atlanta. Yeah, and I won that, you know, last year, you know, so it's just been crazy, but it's exciting. And, you know, when you do good or when you do bad, you learn from something from it regardless, you know, so.
Yeah, I am so happy that you brought up InvestFest. First of all, I think Earn Your Leisure, the podcast and the guys are just like a natural, I won't say competition, but they're definitely in our industry in terms of podcasting, yeah. Right? And so I definitely have looked to them for like, you know, what are they doing? What's, you know, what's working for them? And even though they're in the finance space, it is kind of like they've grown into the business aspect of it, right? Of not just like, here's how to start a real estate business, but like, here's how to like, you know, grow this into something that is sustainable and that lives beyond you. And InvestFest, yes, it's in Atlanta. Afrotech is going to be in the area this year.
Yeah, I'm going. Well, I'm going. It's next week, actually. It's down in Austin. And so I'm excited because, you know, sometimes you don't see enough of us in, you know, some of these spaces. And I think it's going to be exciting. I think the number they're anticipating maybe like 15,000, you know, that I can't wait for that energy, you know, and that ability to connect with like-minded individuals that are like trying to build a company, trying to take it from, you know, one to two to two to three type of thing. And so I'm ready to immerse and learn. And this actually is my first time, you know, so I'm a little nervous too. So not this go around, just going as like a spectator to see where I need to fit in come next year, because come next year I want to be a little bit more, you know, of a on a national stage and having opportunities to kind of speak. And you know, I've had some really cool experiences that I want to share with others that hopefully could help them, you know, within their business.
Yeah. So you, again, like you've said, you're really successful at pitching here in North Carolina, but you're already thinking into next year of how you can go to a national stage, how you can probably go to a global stage, like this world map behind you. So talk to me a little bit about some of the mindset shifts you've had to make to say like, okay, like we've done really well in North Carolina. I think we can maintain this. Like if we, you know, hit our goal of this 1.2 million, which like, let me not say if, when you hit your goal of 1.2 million, like how can we invest this back into the business in a way that will grow our national footprint? Like what is your mindset behind that?
A part of it is a lot of it is exposure. So, you know, I've been blessed to like have good mentorship. So like my advisory board, I mean, I have people that are, you know, sold their company for millions of dollars, like active investors, you know, working for large companies like Google, you know, been through mergers and acquisitions. So for me, it's like, you don't know what you don't know. So surround yourself with people that know, have been through it, that can lead you. And so I just really listen to the things that they say, and try to iterate it to, you know, the visionary mindset that I have. And I feel like that's a big part of me now expanding across the nation and finding opportunities to really allow us to expand. And, you know, I feel like, you know, not just investment, but also on just the business side, it's all about like having a really good case study. We have a really great case study that articulates what we've been able to do in the region with a very prominent health system. So now we can take that on the road, and now I can talk to other health systems. And then the same with investment, you know, hey, this is what I've done with 125 to, you know, double my revenue, you know, and this is what I want to do with a million to 7x that, you know. And so being able to talk through that is a lot of mentorship that I, you know, happen to have. And, you know, whether it's accelerators that I get connected with and just individuals that have done it that, you know, just show me the way, you know. And so that's, you know, kind of why I do what I do and speak to other individuals that have, you know, are coming behind me to allow them to see what they need to do in order to be not only in my seat, but be better than me. So that's a part of the journey in itself, and being a sponge, being humble, not thinking I know it all, you know, and just really being open to growth and whatever that looks like.
No, I love that. I love that. And I think that's such an incredible note to end on, because again, it just gives people something to think about. Like, how can I get to a point where I at least have a proof of concept and I know how I want to leverage that to continue to grow the business, because that's what it's about. And I think that's what you're angling at right now. And I'm so excited to see you grow and see this, you know, become a national name. So thank you so much for sharing your time with me today. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure is all mine.